Welcome to Magic's Big Adventure, Volume 2, a BelowTopSecret.com member podcast feature. In my first volume, if you've had a chance to sleep your way through that, I kind of touched on a few things and babbled about many things, which is the format for this. It's unscripted, I've got some little bullet points on a sticky note, and that's pretty much it. And in this one, I wanted to cover in greater detail this whole sorcery thing, because I mentioned it in the previous volume, but this whole volume is just dedicated to my 6 months as a ersatz or erstwhile Wiccan sorcerer. And that was an interesting 6 months, to put it mildly. I'm talking about this off the cuff. I haven't even, I talk about going back and reading my confession thread. I haven't looked at that thread in months, you know, but I'm just going through the stuff just the way I remember it. If there's some discrepancies, well, that's the way memory goes, and so it goes. So there's my disclaimer. My career as a sorcerer began when I was young and hopefully a little less wise than I am now. And back in those days, this was 1982, as I recall, I was pretty poor. Poor as dirt, I think would be the correct way to put it. Not a lot of marketable job skills and getting by on menial jobs and looking for an angle. And in the back of maybe a Popular Mechanics, I don't remember, there's an ad for The Magic Power of Witchcraft, a book by Gavin and Yvonne Frost. And I got a copy. I don't remember it being all that expensive, which was good. And it was kind of fun. It was a hardbound book, and it came with a little coin. It was a little, you know, pot metal coin with a pentagram on one side, and on the other side, a little star, and as I will, so mote it be. It was very cute, you know, the whole Wiccan thing. But I started experimenting with, I did all kinds of things during that period, too. In 6 months, I was a busy kid. In addition to holding down a menial job at a warehouse, at night I would come back and do this. And I was married at the time. We're now divorced, my ex-wife. And so my ex-wife is something of a witness, although she didn't used to hang around when I was actually doing the whole pentagram and candle thing. And what that amounted to, by the way, was on the coffee table in front of the stereo, I'd darken the room and have a couple of candles lit, and in between the candles I would use ordinary Morton's table salt to draw a pentagram on the tabletop. And it was dark, and the candles were on each side of it, and that caused the salt crystals to have a really interesting looking glow. And if you stared at the pentagram would seem to change colors and everything like that. I think that was mainly an optical effect, sort of like that vision purple thing, spots on your eyes and stuff like that. So, and in fact, you'd see these, I'd see these after images when I looked away from the pentagram. But I really got into it. I mean, I made my own robe using my wife's sewing machine. I sewed my own robe. And and what's interesting is during this time, I was a professing Christian and had been one for like 5 years. But I didn't see the conflict, because I wouldn't be a bad sorcerer. I was going to be a good sorcerer. And the word sorcerer wasn't even used. It was more like a, the magic power of witchcraft. I'm just a witch, and a good witch, like Glinda the Good instead of the Wicked Witch of the West. Ironically, I guess I started off as one and kind of went downhill from there. But there's this whole business of had the robe and the little coin and but the big thing for me, the big draw, was the meditation on the pentagram and this whole notion of building up. If any Wiccans out there, about this whole thing of visualizing energy and doing things like building a beacon of energy, spiritual energy, to draw attention to yourself. And the essence of sorcery is just that, communing with spirits, summoning spirits, and interacting and communicating with spirits. And I didn't think of it as sorcery at the time. I just thought, magic power of witchcraft, and here's how you do it. And there was all kinds of interesting things in the book, like how to make honiger, a mixture of honey and vinegar to control your body pH, and just all kinds of weird stuff. And that was all interesting. But the whole pentagram thing was what really caught my interest, because that seemed to be where the action was. So during that six-month period, it wasn't every night, but it was several times a week I would do the whole pentagram thing. And I'd do it late at night when my wife was in bed, and You know, so she wasn't really out there like watching me doing this. It was just me, and I was quiet. I didn't, you know, chant or anything like that. It was all just, you know, if you were to walk into the room while I was doing this, you'd just see me sitting there, usually in my custom-made robe, which was black, by the way. And you'd see me sitting there on the couch in front of the coffee table, staring down at this pentagram between a couple of candles, and probably not moving for long periods of time. At first, it really was just kind of interesting, and I was getting into the whole visualizing of the beacon and all that. It kind of evolved, and here's the thing: it's you know, what's interesting about this story, and I'll hopefully get to that in a reasonable period of time, is that this story doesn't just involve me. So there's stuff that other people saw that corroborated the stuff that I saw, which is one of the reasons why I give it a little credence as to what might have been going on then. But also I can say, hey, you know, this is what I saw, and, you know, my wife was seeing shadows on the wall later and things like that, and, you know, this guy got beat up, and it was a very strange coincidence that he got beat up almost exactly the same time that I had an experience that seemed to indicate that I had summoned a demon. So so you can say, okay, coincidence, you know, it's like, sure, maybe. I'm coming to realize that there really isn't any such thing as coincidence. There are no coincidences. But getting on to this, at first, you know, it was pretty benign stuff, and I was getting a feeling that maybe I was, you know, and I was going like this for several weeks, and not really seeing anything like concrete that I could point a finger at and say, oh yeah, see, I turned that guy into a frog. It wasn't anything like that. But over time, I got the feeling that there were presences coming in response to my meditations and this whole building of the beacon exercise where you envision this huge column of light and all that. The turning point came when I was at work, and I was working in a warehouse, and I worked with this guy who was somewhat older than I was and, frankly, something of a loser. And he just had a bad day, and he was making my life miserable at work. And he was doing things that deliberately hurt my productivity, is another way. The guy was sabotaging my work. And, you know, we're working at these low-wage jobs, and you're lucky to just have a job back then. This was in the wake of the Carter administration, the economy was not the best in the world. And I was pissed. I came home after that day of work, and I was just furious. And that night, I just fumed and I fumed. And so that night, I went ahead and I drew out the pentagram. And this time, I just thought about this guy, and I was just thinking about him and how pissed off I was at him. And I was just focusing all this anger into the pentagram. And I mean, I was furious. And what was interesting was in the process of meditating on the pentagram while I was feeling this way, my anger actually seemed to build. It actually got kind of frenzied, I guess you could say. And again, someone walking into the room would just see me staring in the pentagram. I wasn't dancing around it or anything like that. It was just me sitting on the couch with my little robe on, staring into this pentagram between a couple of candles. But this anger built and built and built, and then all of a sudden, it felt like it just rushed out of my body, just like into the pentagram. It was like a very, very distinct sensation. And right at that moment, there was a sound that sounded like it came from the pentagram. And it was one of those, did I hear that kind of things? And it sounded like a mosquito landing in your ear. Really short, though, kind of like zzz, like that. And then, you know, my anger was in, it was gone. And there was this little zzz, and I had this really funky feeling like, okay, this is bad. I knew at that moment that something not good had just happened, but I wasn't sure. So I, you know, and every night I'd make a fresh pentagram. This time I just kind of, you know, all right, close the pentagram and get that pentagram off the table and put out the candles and went to bed. Well, the next morning I go into work and this guy, didn't show up. And, you know, so I'm, you know, working along, like a few hours passed, I think, and this guy was a few hours late, and when he came in, he was in bad shape. He had like a sling on his arm, his face was all bruised, I think he'd had stitches, he was limping, and he was in bad shape, and so I'm like, well, you know, so we gathered around, and it's like, well, what happened? And he says, well, and this guy was, you know, kind of a low life. He lived downtown, and this isn't a gambling town. And He said he was walking home about, and I forget, it was like 11 o'clock, like the night before. It didn't register with me then, but it turned out that when this happened, the way he described it, was right about the time I had had my experience with the pentagram. I remember putting that together later. But at the time he told me, or told us, you know, when we were standing there, it didn't really dawn on me that there was a connection. I had actually kind of forgotten about it. That morning I actually felt pretty good. I didn't really remember the night before. And he said, I was just walking home, and he lived, you know, walk home from a casino, and a guy just walked, a huge guy, a big guy just walked out of nowhere without saying a word and just started beating the hell out of him, just beat him senseless. And he said he woke up in the hospital and was lucky he wasn't killed. He did not recognize the guy. He did not, claimed he'd never seen him before, and as far as I know, they never caught the guy. And I didn't put that together until later, and then I realized, could this have been related to what happened the night before? And again, coincidence? Maybe. Who's to say? But when I realized that there was probably a connection, you know, in retrospect, what would the right thing be? I mean, the right thing to do would be to say, okay, I'm getting out of this because this is dangerous. People are getting hurt here. But the way I looked at it was, aha, this stuff actually works. And so I got into it more. And what's kind of scary thinking back on that time is that I kept doing my pentagram meditations, and I was really getting into the whole scrying thing, and I didn't use bowls of water, I just used the pentagram, and I just would stare at the pentagram, and I would want to know what people were up to that I knew. And what was interesting about this is I didn't use this so-called scrying power for anything actually worthwhile. I was just like so obsessed that people were saying bad things about me or plotting against me or whatever. And I just got totally wrapped up in all this. And the scary part is when I think back on it, there's missing time in a way. And I don't mean in the sense of like, you know, waking up face down on the pavement, sort of I blacked out last night, missing time. But just kind of not remembering much about what happened after that. So anyway, it went along like that for a while longer. I think it was some months. And things were getting strained between me and my wife. And she was becoming increasingly unhappy with my whole Wiccan thing. Yeah, you know, she knew about it. She didn't really care about it when I started. She was like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, she thought it was silly. But it started coming to a head when she started complaining about seeing shadows on the wall during the day. And, you know, I figured, yeah, whatever, you ditzy broad. And it's like, yeah, sure, you know. I didn't really think much of it. And it got worse over a few weeks or so. And finally got to the point where she was getting, you know, up to the point where she was going to leave if I didn't stop. And I just could not understand what her problem was until one day, when it was like a weekend, I think it was a Saturday, and I was doing something around the house, and we lived in an apartment on the second floor. So, you know, there weren't people walking by because it was a second floor. And I was turning around, leaving the dining room, and I was walking into the living room. And on the wall behind the stereo, I saw a shadow. It looked like a silhouette. And the thing that just kind of blows my mind when I, because I can still remember seeing that silhouette, it's the kind of thing you don't forget. And it looked like Thomas Jefferson, you know, on the nickel with his little pigtail in the back and everything. And it was moving slowly across the wall. It took maybe 2 or 3 seconds to move across the living room wall, and it just disappeared. And it looked like a shadow. But the problem was there was no light source or image or any movement of light that corresponded to that shadow. The shadow just, it didn't make sense, really, looking at it. There was nothing that explained why that shadow was there. And the outline of the shadow was not something I expected to see in my apartment in the middle of the day. It was after I saw that I said, okay, I got to get out of this. And I realized then it's like, they didn't leave, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, I can summon demons and dispatch them to do my bidding. Wah-ha-ha. Well, no, what happened was they were hanging around and they were apparently messing with my head. And the problem was I was not aware of that. Anyway, we're kind of coming to the end. So that's kind of a brief verbal description of, so what I did, by the way, you know, here's the classic Wiccan thing. I didn't just stop. Oh no, I actually did like a little ceremony where I put like salt in each of the corners of the apartment, and I said these various incantations, which aren't in like any magic mumbo. It's just things like, you may not come here, you know, this is my domain. I only, this is all this wild stuff. But after I did that, I didn't see any of the more shadows. My wife stopped complaining, and things seemed to get better in that sense. So what's the moral of that story? Well, you know, I can say, ooh, stay away from sorcery, but, you know, people will be drawn to that. And, you know, again, I mean, my wife was seeing this stuff going on, and that kind of lends some weight to maybe it wasn't just me hallucinating. But, again, there's always a reasonable doubt as to just what the heck was really going on. But anyway, I'll cover more of that later as I go through the series. Anyway, I hope you have enjoyed Volume 2 of Magic's Big Adventure. And heck, tonight I might just record Volume 3 because I've got so much to say. Lucky you. Anyway, until next time, this is Magic, signing out.